Baseball Tonight is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. For your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone is...
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, May 3rd, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my hotel room in Philadelphia, because Taylor, we had Sunday Night Baseball here last night, Mets and Phillies. We've just been getting this crazy string of games. It's unbelievable.
I know, right? This is like back in the fall. This is like an inside ESPN comparison, but the Saturday night college football games were duds every single week for like 13 or 14 weeks straight. So I feel like this is the sports gods balancing things out for you, and you are on the positive receiving end of this. This is very exciting. I enjoyed the game last night, and glad you are not bored in the stands when you're out reporting.
Wow, it was wild. And we're going to be talking about it today. We're going to be hearing from Phillies manager Joe Girardi, who had a very distinct feeling about what happened with his team last night. We're also going to be hearing from Francisco Lindor as we go along today. Before we get to that, let's do some news and notes. One of the most interesting injuries of the year, and I heard about this one yesterday from my teenage son, who plays a lot of video games and gets really emotional and slams his hand when things aren't going well. Oakland Athletics left-hander Jesus Luzardo will be off the mound for a while and maybe off of video games too. He's out indefinitely after breaking his pinky on his pitching hand when he thumped a table while playing a video game before his start on Saturday. He was placed in the 10J injured list. My son sent it to me, I think, because it helps to give him cover. Like, see, Dad, I'm not the only one who gets upset playing video games. But Jesus Luzardo, not available after getting hurt playing a video game. White Sox center fielder Luis Robert exited Sunday's game against the Indians because of a strained right hip flexor. X-rays were negative, but Robert will go on the injured list. That, according to manager Tony La Russa. The Nationals, the Marlins, and Ryan Zimmerman got the Nationals going.
Rogers ready, he deals. Swing, a high drive, straightaway center field. This one crushed. Harrison back, and there it goes. Right over the 402 mark in dead center. A three-run home run for Ryan Zimmerman.
That from the Nationals Radio Network. Max Scherzer had a busy day. Tossed a five-hitter and then rushed away after the two-hour, 37-minute game to be with his wife Erica for the birth of their third child on Sunday night. A's and Orioles, Ramon Laureano continues to do big things.
Now the 1-0 pitch to Ramon is swung on, driven to right center field, way back. Stewart's at the track, you'll turn and watch it fly. What an eighth inning for Laureano. He puts the A's on his back, and he gives the A's a 7-5 lead.
And that would be the final score. Ken Korak on A's cast. A.J. Pollock had a huge day. Hit a grand slam. He hit a three-run homer. And then it was this.
Waiting at the plate, facing Zimmerman. Two home runs today. And one of them a grand slam. And this one is hit deep to left field. And it's off the wall. Just missed a home run by a foot or so. Coming in to score is Taylor. Eight runs batted in for A.J. Pollock. What a day for the Dodger left fielder.
Tim Nevert, AM 570 LA Sports. The Dodgers win that game 16-4. Philadelphia Phillies relief pitcher Jose Alvarado was suspended for three games after a bench-clearing incident between the two teams on Friday. He appealed that suspension, and he was available for last night's game, and that didn't necessarily turn out well. Early in the Sunday night baseball game, Roman Quinn made an incredible play.
2-2, laced out into center field, and that's a base hit. Smith towards third. He's on his way to the plate. Here's the throw on a bounce tag out at the plate. Roman Quinn throws out Dominic Smith.
Boog Sciambi, the legend on ESPN Radio. Now, in the bottom of the sixth, the Phillies had a moment when you thought, you know what, they're taking control of this game.
Big hole out there at shortstop for Gregorius, who swings here and hammers one. Right field, that one back on its way, gone. Shift or no shift, Didi blasts it over the right field wall. It's a three-run homer, and the Phillies out front. It is 4-2.
But in the top of the eighth inning, the Mets began to rally, and they tied the score on a crazy play.
The 1-2 is punched towards first off the glove of Rhys Hoskins, trickles into right field. Racing to third is Villar. Safe at first is Peraza. And now the ball gets away for a second and scrambling home is Villar. And we're tied up at 4-4.
Now, what happened in that moment is that the ball got to Rhys Hoskins with Villar at third base, and he kind of absentmindedly flipped the ball to second base rather than run the ball back in the infield or return it to the pitcher, and Villar scored 4-all. And you could just see Joe Girardi in the Phillies dugout upset about what happened. That rally in the top of the eighth inning after Jose Alvarado issued some walks continued.
Pitched his college baseball at Princeton. Here's a swing and a line drive ripped out towards right center field. That's going to touch down for a hit. Quinn will pick it up. One run is in. Lindor coming in to score. Conforto on his heels. He's in to score. And just like that, the Mets have an 8-4 lead.
And so you thought it was over, right? Wrong. Bottom of the ninth inning, Edwin Diaz lost the plate, issued a walk. The Phillies were rallying. Rhys Hoskins came to the plate with an opportunity to tie the score.
Diaz is ready. Here comes a 2-1. Swing and a ball ripped right field going back Conforto. And that one is gone. What are they saying? It's a home run. A home run for Rhys Hoskins the opposite way. And this game is tied. Incredible.
But then they went to replay, and the home run was overturned. Hoskins was sent to second base. Replays I saw showed that the ball hit the very top railing above the right field fence, and the folks back in the replay center got that call right. The inning continued. Diaz came out of the game. Jeurys Familia came in. This is how it ended.
Here's the pitch. And a swing and a miss struck him out, and that's the ball game. Harper is gone, and the Mets hang on to win it. 8-7 the final, a controversial ending as the Phillies thought they had tied it on an opposite field homer by Rhys Hoskins.
And I can't remember a game in which a team made as many mistakes in the field as the Phillies did last night. We'll be talking about that with Tim Karchin. Before we get there, ESPN Films' latest documentary, 144, takes viewers inside the WNBA's unprecedented 2020 season. 4 months after the WNBA postponed its season due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the league set out to play a condensed season entirely in a bubble, where 144 players across 12 teams not only came together to play basketball, but also to dedicate their season to social justice. 144 premieres May 13th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. The film will be available on ESPN Plus immediately after it airs. And today on ESPN Daily, Angels pitcher Shohei Ohtani is doing things that haven't been seen in baseball since 100 years ago. Here's what that means for MLB's future. On ESPN Daily, listen on your favorite podcast app.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkson.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirkton is right. He covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, you say that baseball never disappoints you. I feel like the baseball gods have just decided that Sunday Night Baseball this year is going to be interesting every week. It feels like every week we get some craziness to talk about. You know, on some nights so far this year, it's been, you know, the greatness of Shohei Ohtani, Fernando Tatis Jr. comeback. And last night was a great, crazy night because it was one of the worst played games I've ever seen. What did you think?
Well, that's why baseball is so beautiful, Buster, is you just shake your head like, how can this happen on a major league field? So many things happened last night. And you're thinking, these are the best players in the world, and they are. And the players have never been bigger, stronger, faster, or better than they are right now. And then to watch a couple plays happen last night that can only be described as little league plays just stuns me. But this is the beauty of the sport, is it takes really good players and it makes them look terrible once in a while. And it makes relatively routine plays turn into impossible plays to make. I mean, how Jonathan Villar could have scored on that ball last night from when he should have barely gotten to third. And then he just ran home because nobody was paying attention. That's just mind boggling to me. If this had happened to me when I was 14 years old, my high school coach and my dad both would have said, what were you thinking about on that? That's what my dad would have said. My high school coach would have screamed at me like, what is wrong with you? Are you watching the game?
Yeah, that was in the eighth inning last night. It allowed the Mets to tie the Phillies, but I give Alex Rodriguez credit. It was almost like he had a sense that this was going to be the night because he was counting the mistakes, in particular on the Philly side during the course of the game. It's like, well, that's now two plays that they've messed up. That's four plays that they've messed up. By the end of the night, our count was seven plays that they messed up. And that doesn't even account for the walks that we saw in that decisive inning by Alvarado, who just seemed to lose his mind. He lost the strike zone. Early in the game, he had Andy McCutchen botching a fly ball, Alec Bohm making a bad throw. Other misplays on the Mets side. You had Gary DeSarcina making a poor decision on whether or not to send Dom Smith home. A great throw by Roman Quinn, just all over the place. But that was the most notable mistake last night that you mentioned. There's a ball hit to Rhys Hoskins. He wasn't able to glove the ball. It gets past him, and as VR races toward third, you see Hoskins go back and he gets the ball in his hand. And I really believe this because you know what a great pro he is in terms of, you know, he cares so much. I think he got frustrated by the fact he wasn't able to glove the ball and just, you know, sort of disgustedly flip the ball to the second baseman rather than pay attention to VR.
Right. And let's give VR some credit there for being heads up. That guy can run. He loves to slide. He's all over the field. Good for him. But again, Buster, it comes back to a bigger picture here. And believe me, I'm not just some angry, old, bitter man here. I'm just saying that our players are better than they've ever been, and they have less of an idea how to play the game than I've ever seen in the 41 years that I've covered. Every game that I do, Buster, from the booth, there is an egregious base running mistake. Every single game I've done. And it's just because I believe, as David Ross told us the other day, we're not playing baseball. This is the industry. We're not playing baseball. We're trying to hit home runs. And we don't have a great understanding of how the game is supposed to be played. Base running, throwing to the right base, defense. And yet the athleticism overpowers the game every night that we watch because you're absolutely dazzled how hard that guy throws, how fast that guy is, and how far that guy can hit the ball. But we've lost track of the little things in between, and it's the little things, sorry, that win and lose games.
Okay, in a moment, we're going to play what was, for me, stunning sound from Philadelphia's manager, Joe Girardi, after the game. And I want to put this into context because I covered Joe Girardi as a player, and I want to see if you disagree with me, Tim, about Joe. Look, when I covered him on the Yankees, 1998, 1999, most of the players on that team, the manager, Joe Torre, they would acknowledge the obvious, right? If the pitcher got lit up, then Joe, after the game, would say, yeah, he didn't have a very good night. You know, he's hanging balls in the middle of the plate. David Cone would be the first guy to be out there and say, I was terrible tonight. I didn't do my job. Joe Girardi, I think, was such a protective teammate, a catcher, that you could walk up to him after an Andy Pettit ugly outing and say, boy, it looked like Andy, just didn't have his good stuff tonight, that sort of question. And Girardi would counter you with like, no, I thought he pitched well. You know, I know he gave up 7 runs in 2 2/3 innings, but Andy was right there on the verge. He was such a glass half full person when it came to other people making mistakes. Is that a fair description of Joe Girardi?
Yes, absolutely. And that's how I've known him his whole life. Do you have different sound to this?
Listen to Joe Girardi after the Phillies game last night.
I mean, we can't make those mistakes. I mean, that's a mistake that we can't afford to make. And we're making way too many mistakes defensively. We need to clean it up. And we talk about it all the time and we work on it, but we need to clean it up. We're giving them way too many extra outs. And you always got to be on your toes in this game. You got to understand who runners are and you got to think ahead. You know, it's just, it's unfortunate because we, you know, and they had some hits tonight that they found holes, plus some of our misexecution cost us the game.
So that's Joe Girardi. How unusual is that sound?
It is, Buster, but it goes back again to he has been watching too many games lately and he's tired of watching it. Just like, again, please, let's understand, nobody loves this game more than I do. And if you play any game, I'm watching it. I'm just telling you that, like you, having covered games from a million years ago, they played the game better, I believe, 20 years ago, maybe even 30 years ago. The players weren't as good. And Joe Girardi and a lot of our veteran baseball guys, I see it and I hear it every day from them. How could this happen in a major league game? So that was Joe Girardi frustrated that when he played for the Yankees, those mistakes simply would not have happened. And I had a former manager tell me, he said, if those things happened 20 years ago, a veteran player on the team would go up to another player and say, what are you doing? That's not the way we play here. But we don't have our own players policing the game like we did 20 years ago when Joe Girardi played. He would have said, hey, you got to clean it up, man, behind the scenes. Now he said it publicly, and he should have, because that was a sloppy game last night.
Yeah, and one of the questions he was asked after the game was whether or not, well, you know what, this is the nature of the team. Alec Bohm at third base is not very good. You know, Rhys Hoskins is not probably an average first baseman in terms of how he plays. Other spots, they have some weaknesses there. But I think Joe was talking about keeping your head in the game, which in that moment, Rhys Hoskins did not have. And we're going to hear from him later in the podcast about that. Now, good thing for the Mets that they came back and won this game to some degree, Tim, because that absolutely masked the night that Francisco Lindor had, the season that he's had so far. Look, this is now officially a thing with him in terms of his slow start. After last night, in which he went 0 for 5, he's batting 171 with a .220 slugging percentage. To put those numbers into context, going into the game, Mets pitchers had a higher batting average. Mets pitchers at 175 with a .225 slugging percentage. And man, he looks lost, Tim.
Buster, that's 9 games in a row for him without an extra base hit and without an RBI. 9 in a row. And I saw your report yesterday. We heard it on Baseball Tonight that Lindor in BP was swinging as hard as he could to try to hit home runs in batting practice. And then he had the weakest contact in that game you could possibly have. Lazy fly balls to the outfield, swinging early in the count. Now, look, this is a great player. He's going to have numbers at the end. But this is another reason why we love the game, is that this guy can't do anything offensively right now. No NBA great jump shooter shoots 18% from the floor for a 30-game stretch. But that's where this guy is headed right now. And I don't understand it, but it just shows you again with the dominant pitching and when you're swinging poorly. And I watched his face after every out last night. It was like, oh, my God, am I ever going to get another hit? No great NBA jump shooter ever says, can I make another three ever? No, they never do that. But hitters do it all the time. And that's, to me at least, where Francisco Lindor is. He's saying, am I ever going to get another hit?
You mentioned the batting practice, and you know, in all the years I covered, and you know, started, I was lucky enough to start covering baseball, watching Tony Gwynn, and you know, other great hitters through the years. And I gotta say that what Lindor did in batting practice yesterday just jumped out at me, where he gets into the cage, and you could see that he was trying to hit home runs. Now, you and I both know that typically the rhythm of the batting practice is, the last round, you might see hitters say, you know what, I'm going to try to hit the ball as far as they possibly can. They try to slam home runs. But for his first round of batting practice to be him swinging as hard as he could and trying to pull home runs, and he did it from the left side and then he did it from the right side, to the point that he was almost falling over, seemed counterintuitive to me. Now, we were in commercial break, you know, after I noticed that, and I mentioned it to Eduardo Perez, you heard me, and Eduardo said, well, maybe he's trying to get his bat out front. I got to say, after watching him the last 10 days and seeing how disjointed his upper half and his lower half and his swing seem to be, where it's like his legs are so far ahead of the rest of his body, I don't, and I'm not a hitting guy, I don't pretend to know hitting, but I don't understand that approach. And I think, you know, you might want to think about what a guy you saw take batting practice a lot, Eddie Murray would do, or Freddie Freeman would do. Alex mentioned last night, hit the ball through the middle of the field, line drives, over the second baseman, over the shortstop, and stop trying to jack the ball.
Right. As you know, and you've reported this several times, that's Freddie Freeman's goal in spring in batting practice every day, is to the line drive over the shortstop set. I watched Eddie Murray take BP for years. He's one of the worst BP hitters I've ever seen. And by worst, I mean he never hit the ball out of the ballpark. He never wanted to swing that hard. He watched Jack Clark swing a bat with the Yankees in BP one night in Baltimore. I was standing right there. And Eddie looked at me and goes, I hope I never have to swing the bat that hard in my life. That's how hard Jack Clark used to swing the bat. And Frank Robinson hated batting practice. He used to tell me he would take six swings, get loose, and get out of there. And so it worries you when somebody's in there trying to swing as hard as he can. And someone told me the other day, Buster, that Lindor has gotten so big. He's gotten bigger. He's gotten a little bulkier, and he's not a big man, as you know, that maybe all that bulk has slowed down his bat a little bit. That's a little bit troublesome too. But to repeat, he's coming out of this. He's too good a hitter to struggle, but it really speaks to how badly he's swinging watching that game again last night.
And he's playing well defensively. He obviously is an excellent base runner. I disagree with you. I think that this year could be a struggle after what I saw last night, because it's very rare for me. And again, I'm not pretending to be a hitting guy, but it's very rare for me to see a great player have his swing look that messed up, where he's so far out in front with the lower half of his body and so far behind with the upper half of his body. It'll be interesting to see what sort of adjustments that he tries to make going forward. The first thing I'm curious about is at batting practice today, if he's going to go back to trying to hit line drives through the middle. Okay, I mentioned Jose Alvarado kind of losing his mind over the weekend. He got into it with Dom Smith. The bench is emptied after he celebrated a strikeout. We saw the same thing in the Cubs and Reds game. Amir Garrett barking at Anthony Rizzo. The bench is clear there. Javier Baez comes leaping over the railing. It'll be interesting to see what kind of suspensions come out of that. What'd you make of those two situations?
Well, again, Buster, I'm acting like the bitter, angry old man again here, and I'm sorry, but these teams are under 500 right now. They haven't played very well. You strike out a guy in a big league game, we've had well over 6,000 of those already by May the 2nd. I'm just not sure you should be chirping after striking somebody out in a big league game when your team's under 500 and it's the 1st of May. Maybe we could just act like we've done this before. We've been there before. And strike your guy out and walk to the dugout. Look, I'm all for celebrations. I have adjusted to bat flips and everything else. But the thought of somebody yelling at me after he strikes me out in the 7th inning or the 3rd inning or the 8th inning, sorry, that just doesn't fly. And if I were Dom Smith, I would be upset too. Look, you can bang on your chest, but when you start looking at somebody and pointing at somebody, I think you've crossed the line there.
Alvarado, immediately when Dom Smith looks at him, throws his glove down like he wants to fight. Joe Girardi was not at that game on Friday night. His daughter Serena graduated from college And so he watched the game on television. He said his emotions swung back and forth. He was like, you know, sort of as he sees it as the manager, he sees his players playing with passion. That gets him excited. He's like, okay, don't do any more. Don't get suspended. And he did get suspended for 3 days. And he's appealed that. Over the weekend, I got a chance to connect with our old friend, Aaron Boone, the manager of the Yankees, who reached 500 on Sunday. And Tim, it feels like that we are barreling toward these epic games this summer between the Red Sox and the Yankees. You know, some years it feels like that we overplay it, but this year you get the Red Sox playing better than expected. You have the Yankees now putting it together with their pitching, and they haven't played yet, and they won't play till June 4th. I looked this up yesterday. Out of the Red Sox, Boston's last 103 games, 19 are going to be against the Yankees.
Well, this is going to be great. You're right. Yankees won 3 in a row, 7 out of 10. And Corey Kluber was great yesterday. 35-year-old guy, 8 shutout innings, 10 strikeouts, first 10K game since 2018. If he is continuing to build, as it appears he is, it's possible he'll be their number 2 starter that they've been looking for. So that'll be great. And the Red Sox are different, Buster. I don't care what anyone says. It's a different dynamic on that team. Alex Cora has made them a different club again. Offensively, they are really good. That bullpen, even though they gave it up yesterday, has been really good. Matt Barnes, nobody can put that guy in play these days. And Chris Sale's coming back. I'll wait till Chris Sale comes back. He adds another element of, you know, competition to that. So, I can't wait. And I think it's back because I think both these teams are going to be good all year.
And the Rays are good, and they've got tremendous pitching. It's going to emerge during the course of the year from the minor league system. And the Blue Jays are dangerous with that lineup. You've known Bob Melvin a long time. So I want you to guess what his reaction would have been over the weekend in private when he heard that Jesus Luzardo, one of his pitchers, broke his hand because he was upset about a result in a video game.
Buster, I buried my head in my hands 3 times during this conversation this morning. This is why I don't play video games ever. I think they bring new meaning to the word tedious to me. But this guy's one of the best young left-handed pitchers in the game, and he broke a finger because he slammed it down because he was playing a video game privately. I haven't even had the courage to call Bob Melvin because I've known him forever, but I can't even do it because I don't even want to know what he would say. But this is, again, Buster, where we need just to recognize this is not the way you comport yourself as a major league player. They're counting on you to be a really important player, and you break a finger playing a video game. Sorry.
So I have to do this admission now. I'm pretty sure I broke my wrist once playing video games.
Well, it's one thing to be a dinky little sports writer and you break your arm playing video games, Buster. Okay. It's another thing to be a left-handed pitcher who throws 97 miles an hour and is critical to your team on the major league level. Okay. You could break both hands playing video games. It might hurt your typing, but it's not going to hurt you on the field. I think you're in a different category than Jesus Luzardo.
You want to hear this story?
No? Yes, of course.
Okay. So we were playing Wii Baseball with my son, and he's about 10 years old, right? And I was too stupid to figure out that you could just merely move your hand and that would equate to a swing. I was actually taking full swings with this device on Wii Baseball. And my son threw me a screwball, which was the pitch that always devastated me. And I swung as hard as I could. And I was wearing socks on a wooden floor. And my feet went out from underneath me. I landed on my left wrist. I could feel it didn't feel right away. And it didn't feel right for the next 6 months. And I never told anyone, because the idea of going to see a doctor and having to explain that injury as someone in my late 40s was something I was not going to do.
Right. Especially when you were trying to beat your 10-year-old son in a video game. Shame on you, Buster. We've all done stupid things like that, but you deserved that sore wrist for 6 months for trying to beat a 10-year-old at anything.
All right. Did you beat your kids ever in basketball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
when Jeffrey Kircher was about 20, he took the ball off my dribble at half court and went in for a layup. And I said a word out loud that I've never said in front of the kids before or after that, once in my whole life. Really bad word. I was so upset that anyone took the ball off my dribble. It was my own son, and I was so upset. But I didn't do anything else. I just yelled a bad word, and that was it. So, yes, I've competed with the kids, for sure.
And you didn't break a bone, so that's a good
idea. That's the point.
All right. Thanks, Sam. Great to talk with you.
Okay, Buster. Buck. See ya.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Taylor, when we've had these mistakes made with instant replay, I've talked about how in baseball there's a high level of accountability, that players who make mistakes have to, after games, go and talk to the reporters and talk about their mistakes. And I saw that with Rhys Hoskins last night. It feels like it's an important part of the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And, he wasn't happy to do it, but you got to do it. I mean, it's your job. This is part of the job. We work in media, so I kind of disrespect guys who run away from the media and don't want to, face the music. So good on Rhys for sticking it out. I know it was uncomfortable for him, and it was uncomfortable for everyone on the Zoom call as well. One of his answers, he's going one word and it's just like, OK, I guess we'll move on. But good on him. Good on him. We need more accountability.
Yeah, I think you described it perfectly. Look, he wasn't happy to be there. His answers, and he apologized at one point, weren't insightful, but he stood up and he was accountable for the mistakes. Give a listen to Rhys Hoskins after the Phillies lost last night.
Hey, Rhys, wondering if you saw the replay yet.
I haven't. No, I haven't yet.
Okay. Have you talked to anybody who did, and what's kind of the feeling in the clubhouse about that last play?
I think the guys in the clubhouse have only seen what was shown on the board, so – they had clear evidence to turn it over, and that's what it was.
How frustrating is that moment for you? You make that defensive play that cost you guys in that inning, and then you think you kind of tied it up. What's that frustration emotions like?
It's high. Frustration's high.
Thanks.
Sorry, I don't have much.
No,
I don't have much more for you. I gotta make a play in the eighth. It's a mental error that can't happen at any point in the game. Certainly not late in the game, but I just put my head down. We know that VR is an aggressive base runner and can't take your eye off him, and I did. Got to run the ball back into the infield and make sure that we get time so we got a chance to fight for another day.
Do you think you guys can get things tightened up on defense more than it has been? And what gives you the confidence that you can, if you think you can?
The talent in the room gives me the confidence that we will.
Okay.
Mac Elb.
Did you hear anyone from the infield saying something about VR coming around third or no?
No, I didn't. I saw him round and I thought I saw him stop. And that was it. But he didn't stop and scored.
It's been, you know, almost a month now since you guys won consecutive games. Do you think giving extra outs to the other team is a big reason because of that?
Usually is when you lose, yeah. Usually is. You can't give the – I mean, these guys are good too, right? They get paid to play baseball professionally just the way that we do. And you can't give any team at the big league level extra outs to work with.
Earlier this season, I caught up with Francisco Lindor. Give a listen.
What is the process for picking your hair?
So it's between me and my hairstylist. We typically go how bold and how clean we want it, and that's the start. And then after that, we decide, all right, what color are we going to go? Are we going to go something bright? Are we going to do something that nobody has done? Or are we going to do something more that's going to blend in with the crowd?
So your teammates say you got a lot of different gloves, and then on a different day, you'll pick a different color. How do you make that choice, and how many gloves do you have?
Yeah, this year I probably have about 12, 15 gloves, and I change them depending on pants color and arm sleeves.
So. You just donated $1 million to your old high school, and there'll be a building with your name on it. What was the biggest trouble you got in when you were in high school?
One time I wore the wrong shoes. They were like, remember the Crocs? I used those to class one time. I got in the biggest trouble ever. So.
Why did they call you Mr. Smile?
All I do is smile, man. That's all I do. I'm a happy person. I'm blessed. I'm humbled to be in my position. I have a great life, an outstanding family. Why not smile?
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Monday. First up, we have Andrew Campbell at Real Camp Drew. Andrew writes in, with all due respect to the Mike Trouts and the Jacob DeGroms of the world's the best player at their position in all of baseball right now has to be Aroldis Chapman, right? 22 of the 32 batters he has faced have struck out. That's a strikeout percentage of 69%. What do you think about that?
Well, Drew, I think your premise is fine, but I disagree with you simply because of volume. That to me is like the year in the NFL when kicker Mark Moseley won the MVP. Right, where it feels like that a specialist maybe shouldn't be put at the same level the other guys. Jacob DeGrom is doing things that we've never seen really since the days of Pedro Martinez, Sandy Koufax from a pitcher. He is unbelievable in his level of domination. And Mike Trout at the outset of this season, it might be one of the great seasons of all time. So I understand why Chapman, you know, using that splitter, you're right. He's preeminent now at his position, but I still don't think of him at the same level of Trout and DeGrom.
Fair enough. Frank at Centigrades 2 writes in, I would bet that a portion of Monday's pod will mention another sensational performance from Cole, but even as a Yankees fan, who I want to hear about is John Means. Who between Means and Mullins do you see as a more likely all-star? Interesting question, Buster.
For the record, Frank, we did not talk about Gerrit Cole. We did talk about how the Yankees are putting it together a little bit. I like Cedric Mullins, and I tweeted out about him over the weekend. In fact, you know, as I'm watching the Phillies having some of the worst production from their center fielders in baseball history in terms of production from any position for any team, I kind of wonder if Cedric Mullins might be a nice fit for the Phillies. Like, you could see them making a move, calling the Orioles, because, you know, Cedric Mullins is 26, and by the time the Orioles turn the corner, he's going to be, what, 30, 31? So I got to believe the Orioles might be at least open to the idea of talking about him.
I'm sure, and I appreciate the realism, because I have a couple Orioles buddies who don't want to believe that they're going to just start selling everyone off. So thanks for getting our head right on that one. Let's go to Corey Rukert at CoreyR_12. He writes in, is Tucker Barnhart a good trade piece for the Reds to dangle to the Yanks? A gold glove winning left-handed hitter with his contract ending next year and Stevenson, the catcher of the future, could the Reds get a good return?
Corey, I think they'd get a decent return, and I think it's a really good fit, and it's along the lines of where I think the Yankees would be thinking. If, in fact, they decide to move past Gary Sanchez, you would assume they'd be looking in that spot to get a left-handed hitter.
And last one for today, John Lewis at John Aiden Lewis writes in, could the Dodgers' struggles be attributed to every opponent seeing their series with them as high stakes? Do managers save up special roster ammo for them?
I think most of the Dodgers' struggles we can attribute to the injuries, a high volume. I mean, geez, over the weekend, losing Dustin May, that's pretty devastating with an elbow issue popping up in his start. But there is something to what you're saying, John. I remember when I covered those Yankee teams in the late 90s, you know, 2000, you know, I had players on other teams say that when they played those Yankee teams, it was like their Super Bowl. And so the Yankees might sort of slog into Tampa Bay for a midweek series, sleepy midweek series from their perspective. And the Rays are like, let's go. Okay, we're facing the Yankees. And pitchers would be up to face them. And that is a challenge for the Dodgers as they move forward.
All righty. I'm sure we'll be talking more Dodgers as we go along this week. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Tim and to Taylor, Reese Hoskins, Francisco Lindor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms or restrictions apply.